From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, analysis of the Chinese response to the U.S. torture report. The possibility of Palestinians taking their case to the International Criminal Court.
Death is one more type of leverage that the Palestinians can use and I think are using in a smart way from their perspective to shake up the Israelis and say there is a price to be paid for the status quo.
An appeal for greater efforts to prevent violence globally. It's all ahead. I'm Susan Yawkey. Hong Kong police have begun arresting protesters who refused to leave the main demonstration site being cleared today. Around 100 people have defied police orders to vacate the heart of the Admiralty protest camp and instead gathered in a sit-in. For hours, Hong Kong authorities have been clearing out the territory's main protest site, bringing a likely end to more than 2 months of pro-democracy demonstrations there. However, one protester said the movement is not finished. It's just the beginning of another phase of protest. Initially thousands strong, the protesters want Beijing to allow fully democratic elections for Hong Kong's top leader in 2017. China has said all candidates must pass through a screening process. The United States has been criticized for the use of controversial post-9/11 enhanced interrogation techniques following the release Tuesday of a report by the Democratic-led Senate Intelligence Committee on methods used by the Central Intelligence Agency to extract information from detained terrorist suspects. The report, released on the eve of Human Rights Day Wednesday, detailed such methods as confinement to small places, sleep deprivation, and simulated drowning. It accused the CIA of misleading Congress and the American people about the effectiveness of those methods. Wednesday, White House spokesman Josh Earnest said President Obama decided to end such practices following a lengthy national debate.
The conclusion that this president has reached is that these differences, which are held by well-meaning, patriotic Americans, many of whom have detailed knowledge of these programs and of our national security efforts more broadly, is that there actually is one thing that both sides do agree on, and it's something that the president agrees to, which is that one of the most powerful tools in our arsenal to protect and advance our interests around the globe is the moral authority of the United States of America. And the commander-in-chief concluded that the use of the techniques that are described in this report significantly undermines the moral authority of the United States of America. And that's why the president, on his second full day here at the White House, issued an executive order ending those tactics.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights said Wednesday there should be no impunity or statute of limitations for torture, even during a state of war. In a commentary in the state-run Xinhua news agency, Wang Shang said the report, along profound racial inequalities, all point to the sheer hypocrisy of the United States as a defender of human rights. China's foreign ministry urged the U.S. to reflect upon itself and correct its ways and earnestly respect and abide by the rules of international conventions. Gordon Chang, China analyst, lawyer, and author, tells VOA's Victor Beatty, China itself engages in torture.
There have been hundreds of documented cases of activists being detained and tortured, and some of them have died, including a Tibetan activist who just died 2 days after being released from 6 years in detention. I think that many people would agree that the United States should reflect on what has happened, but we got to remember that this was in connection with a war against terrorists, and what China does is use torture against its own people. That's a big difference. And, of course, the other thing is that these revelations come from a branch of the U.S. government itself. This is the part of the way of, a democracy rebalancing its activities. This is a very important thing for China to reflect. So, yes, everyone needs to reflect.
A senior Chinese official speaking earlier this week before the Senate report was released in Brussels said China has made great strides in the last 30 years on human rights. He said China's emphasis is on the right to development and survival, not necessarily civil liberties.
China is going to say that because when we look at what's happened over the course of the last 10 years, human rights have suffered setbacks, especially during the last period of the rule of Hu Jintao, and of course during the 2 years of Xi Jinping's rule. This is a very important development because China's moving in the wrong directions. we compare China today to the era of Mao Zedong, the founder of the People's Republic. Yes, things have gotten better. But if we compare today to a decade ago, things have gotten worse.
Gordon, the state-run Global Times ran an editorial titled, "Despite Torture Report, U.S. Escapes Censure." It was kind of a backhanded compliment, saying in many developing countries, including China, there have been applause for U.S. democracy after the release of these reports. They have paid attention to the courage of the U.S. rather than the crime of prisoner abuse. The U.S., quote, is able to spin such wicked acts as prisoner abuse to become a positive through mobilizing pro-U.S. forces worldwide.
China, of course, looks at these things in a context of a conspiracy. This is, though, the way democracies operate. You know, there is contention. There are a number of differing views in a democracy. And, you know, what we saw with the Senate report is interesting in the sense that we have people in the government who are revealing what many people consider to be abuses. So I think that this is important. And, of course, we're not spinning this. This is just the way democracy operates.
Chang says while the Senate report will harm the U.S. image in the world in the short term, it is part of a healthy debate you don't see in China and other authoritarian societies.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has defended the decision to extend nuclear negotiations with Iran until June 30, 2015. He said a deal to limit Iran's nuclear capability could be reached in 3 to 4 months or even sooner. VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy has details.
Kerry spoke at a forum titled "Stormy Seas, the United States and Israel in a Tumultuous Middle East." The gathering was sponsored by the Brookings Institution think tank. Secretary Kerry said, preventing Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons is at the center of President Obama's foreign policy.
We believe that the best way to prevent Iran from having a nuclear weapon is through a verified, negotiated agreement.
But Kerry said it will become apparent long before the new June 30th deadline if an agreement is feasible.
We're not looking at 7 months. I think the target is 3-4 months. And hopefully even sooner if that is possible.
Kerry recalled that critics had predicted Iran was bound to cheat and that the administration was jeopardizing national security. The Secretary of State argued that instead, the interim agreement had given international inspectors daily access to Iran's enrichment facilities. He said Iran's stockpile of highly enriched uranium has been diluted or converted and a plutonium reactor is effectively frozen. Kerry explained why the United States and its international partners agreed to extend the deadline for negotiations with Iran.
I believe President Obama believes, the administration deeply believes, that it would be the height of irresponsibility, be against our own interests and those of our closest partners, to walk away from a table when and if a peaceful resolution might really be within reach.
Kerry said ensuring that Iran does not obtain a nuclear weapon has been the heart of President Obama's foreign policy from the moment that he took office. That's why Kerry argued that if the negotiations succeed in reaching an agreement, the entire world, including Israel, will be safer for it. Mohammed El-Shenawy, VOA News, Washington.
Jordan's envoy to the UN said she will be trying to get the UN Security Council to agree on a resolution before Christmas that would press for a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Ambassador Dina Kawar, the Arab representative to the 15-member council, said that there are Palestinian and French drafts, and there may be others. The Palestinians circulated a draft on October 1st, asking the council to set a deadline of November 2016 for an Israeli withdrawal from all Palestinian territory occupied since 1967. French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius said France is working on a UN resolution aimed at restarting Israeli-Palestinian peace negotiations and setting a two-year deadline for success. VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy spoke with Ori Neer with Americans for Peace Now about the impact of such moves on the peace process.
Arab League foreign ministers unanimously backed Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas' decision to move ahead with a proposed UN resolution that would set a November 2016 deadline to end the Israeli occupation. Does such move have any chance of success?
Well, it depends on how do you define success. If what you mean by success is that it will apply enough pressure on Israel to act unilaterally to withdraw from the West Bank and allow for a Palestinian state to come to fruition, the answer is probably no. That's not going to be the success. But if you define success a little more narrowly as another means of leverage by the international community on Israel to take action, to negotiate with the Palestinians, to take action toward the two-state solution, I think yes. I think it's definitely something that resonates in Israel. As we saw, the recent decisions by European countries to recognize Palestine as a Palestinian state are things that definitely resonate in Israel and create a feeling, an impression that there is a momentum internationally toward support of a Palestinian state.
Would that kind of pressure impact the Israeli elections that are coming soon?
I don't know. It's something that is in the background of Israelis, and it's not direct. So I think that indirectly it has a chance to impact people's outlook and to perhaps reach some kind of a conclusion that Prime Minister Netanyahu, is not leading them in a pragmatic way. But it's indirect.
French foreign minister said his country is working at the United Nations for a resolution to restart Israeli-Palestinian peace negotiations, setting a two-year deadline for success. Would that mean the UN will take over the American mediation?
No, I don't think that means that any other international player is going to take the role of the United States as a mediator or as a broker. But what I think already we see happening is that there are other players, other bodies in the international community, particularly the EU, the European Union, taking over or becoming more of a catalyst in trying to push the parties, particularly Israel, toward negotiations, toward the implementation of a two-state solution. So I think that is happening.
Final question. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas warned that the Palestinians could take other steps if the Security Council rejects the resolution, including joining the International Criminal Court. Is that doable, and would that impact the Israeli stance on negotiations?
Yeah, it's doable. I think it's something that could happen, definitely. Whether it would impact Israel's position on negotiations is remains to be seen. What it definitely will do is it will make an impression on the Israeli public that there is a price to pay, that there is some kind of a leverage there if they don't act. The threat of the international court taking real action, real sanctions against Israeli individuals or against Israel in a more general way is something that Israelis definitely are aware of and are concerned about. So that is one more means, one more type of leverage that the Palestinians can use and I think are using in a smart way from their perspective to shake up the Israelis and say there is a price to be paid for the status quo.
Ori Neer, spokesperson for Americans for Peace Now. The International Criminal Court has referred Libya to the United Nations Security Council for failing to hand over the son of the late Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi for prosecution. The ICC wants Saif al-Islam Gaddafi to stand trial for alleged crimes against humanity linked to the deadly suppression in 2011 of mass protests that toppled and killed his father. Analysts are describing the ICC move announced Wednesday as largely symbolic. They say it is uncertain whether Saif al-Islam Gaddafi ever will stand trial. The younger Gaddafi remains in the custody of a revolutionary militia in the western town of Zintan, and militia leaders have repeatedly refused to surrender him. The government in Tripoli has no effective jurisdiction in Zintan, as war-ravaged Libya struggles to function under two opposing governments. The UN on Monday postponed a new round of peace talks between Libya's warring factions as fierce fighting raged west of Tripoli between the internationally recognized government and a grouping of Islamist militias. Deadly clashes also were reported in Libya's second city, Benghazi. A new study finds rampant violence throughout the world takes a particularly heavy toll on women and children. The World Health Organization, which has just published its first status report on the prevention of violence, is calling for greater efforts globally to prevent violence. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The new study finds homicide rates decreased by 16% globally between 2000 and 2012. By any measure, this should be good news. But the 274-page report reveals that 475,000 people were murdered in 2012, making homicide the third leading cause of death for males aged 15 to 44 years. A survey of 133 countries shows one in four children has been physically abused. One in five girls has been sexually abused. One in three women has been a victim of physical and/or sexual violence by an intimate partner. And one in 17 older people reports having been abused in the past month. WHO Department for Management of Noncommunicable Diseases, Disability, Violence and Injury Prevention Director Etienne Krug says more than 1 billion people are affected by violence in their lifetime. He says the results are shattering.
Mental health consequences are very important. People affected by violence often end up with depression, alcohol and drug dependence, anxiety, etc. Sexual and reproductive health problems after rape, unwanted pregnancy, spread of HIV, sexually transmitted diseases, etc. And less known but very important, the fact that those affected by violence very often change their behavior, are more likely to adopt a risky lifestyle, which includes smoking, alcohol misuse, drug abuse, less physical activity.
Dr. Krug says violence can be reduced and prevented in several ways.
Parenting programs to help parents be better parents and thereby reduce child maltreatment. Working with caregivers of older people to prevent elder abuse. Working with young adolescents, educating them in a sense that they understand that the response to stress is not necessarily violence, but that there are other ways of dealing with it.
The report finds prevention efforts in Western European countries are paying off, with homicide rates decreasing in some of the highest income countries. But it says homicide rates are very high in the Americas. WHO Coordinator of Violence Prevention, Alexandra Bouchard, says homicide rates also are relatively high in Africa, as is violence against women and elder abuse. But he tells VOA some African countries are implementing successful prevention programs.
In particular, in South Africa, a program called IMAGE, the acronym Intervention with Microfinance and Gender Equity, aimed at reducing intimate partner violence as a way of preventing HIV/AIDS transmission, and they managed to reduce it by half through a combination of microfinance and supporting women and men in non-violent conflict resolution within the house.
The report says about 80% of the 133 countries surveyed have enacted laws against rape, domestic violence, carrying weapons in schools, and against abuse in institutions for older people. But just more than half of the countries report these laws are being fully enforced. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Two champions of children's rights, Pakistani education activist Malala Yousafzai and Indian child rights advocate Kalish Satyarthi, have received the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, Norway, making history as the youngest laureate and the first Indian-born winner. 17-year-old Malala, speaking at the award ceremony, said children should be helped, not pitied.
It is time to take action, so it becomes the last time that we see a child deprived of education.
Satyarthi, who has worked to end child slavery, said his goal is for every child to be free to be a child.
I refuse to accept that the shackles of slavery can ever be more stronger than the quest for freedom. I refuse to accept here.
The two are sharing the award's $1.1 million prize. Thank you for joining us today for International Edition. You can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. I'm Susan Yaffe in Washington.
This is Today in History. On this day in 630, Muhammad, the founder of the Muslim religion, led his army into Mecca. The city soon surrendered to him. On December 11th, 1792, charges against French King Louis XVI were presented at his trial. His conviction and subsequent execution ended absolute monarchy in France, but the excesses of the French Revolution would later usher in the rule of Napoleon. In 1917, General Edmund Allenby entered Jerusalem on foot and declared martial law after the successful British conquest of Palestine. The British general walked rather than rode into the city out of respect for its importance. On this day in 1918, Russian writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn was born. Through his books, the world came to know the horrors of Stalin's prison system. Solzhenitsyn won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1970. He was exiled from the Soviet Union 4 years later. In 1927, a short-lived communist uprising in the southern Chinese city of Guangzhou began. It would be brutally suppressed by local warlords. In 1931, the British Parliament enacted the Statute of Westminster, establishing equality between the United Kingdom and the self-governing dominions of the British Commonwealth, Australia, Canada, Newfoundland, New Zealand, South Africa, and the Irish Free State. In 1936, after ruling less than 1 year, King Edward VIII became the first English monarch to voluntarily abdicate the throne. He gave up his throne to marry American divorcee Wallace Warfield Simpson. On this day in 1972, America's last manned mission to the moon landed on the lunar surface. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In today's world, regional threats like the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL, if left unaddressed, will become global threats, said U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. That's why the United States and its allies are ramping up the fight against ISIL, an organization that rapes and brutalizes women and sells them as child brides. It viciously and indiscriminately attacks groups of all ethnicities, sects, and religions, including Jews, Christians, and Muslims. ISIL's goal is to impose their reign of terror over as many people and as much territory as it can by any means necessary. They call it a caliphate, said Secretary Kerry, but in reality, it's a zone of chaos and destruction. Since September, President Barack Obama has outlined America's plan to mobilize a broad coalition to degrade and ultimately defeat ISIL. And progress has been achieved. Already, ISIL's hold on territory has been reversed from the Mosul Dam to territory north of Tikrit and to the Baiji oil refinery where ISIL has been driven out. The people of Amirli were liberated, and in Kobani, Kurds were putting up a fierce and brave fight in order to rout ISIL forces. ISIL's finances have been severely restricted thanks to efforts by the U.S., Gulf states, and others. Moreover, the message of ISIL is being challenged by Islam's highest authorities. The Grand Mufti of Egypt declared that ISIL is the organization of Satan. Major mullahs, imams, and clerics are all speaking out in Friday prayer against the notion that ISIL has any legitimacy. Ultimately, said Secretary Kerry, ISIL is no match for the United States and its allies. We will gain the inevitable triumph, he said, and build a peaceful and secure future for the Middle East and, by extension, for the entire world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.